timeless information for your self-care and health. HRNradio.com.
Hey there, and welcome back to the Dr. Teresa Nicasio Show, a place of inspiration, education, and hope for a kinder, healthier, and more sustainable world. Here on this show, and so those of you who have been listening know that we are here to join together in community, lifting each other up, learning new ways to care for ourselves, as well as each other and our planet. Today's show is made possible because of the generous support of our sponsor, New Roots Herbal, the makers of Acidophilus Ultra, as well as countless other high-quality natural products you can trust. And again, those of you who have read my book, Yum, know how crazy I am about their low-glycemic prebiotic sweetener. If you'd also like to join in supporting the vision of this show by making a donation or would like to be an advertiser or sponsor for any of the show's segments, just contact me through TeresaNicasio.com website. And that's Teresa with an H, so it's T-H-E-R-E-S-A, N like Nancy, I-C-A, two S's like Sam, S-S-I-O.com. Be sure to join us next time when we'll have the pleasure of talking with the world's most renowned existential psychotherapist, Dr. Irvin Yalom. I just can't tell you how excited I am about this. He has made a huge difference in my life as a therapist, as so many others. Even if you're not a mental health professional, you actually might still be aware of this man. He's an incredible thought leader, and he's written a lot of seminal books, both fiction and nonfiction. Some of his most famous ones you may be familiar with are Love's Executioner, When Nietzsche Wept, and so forth. Anyway, this is going to be a particularly special interview because now at 86, Dr. Yalom is going to be talking about his own story, his life. As a therapist, that's always special, turning his perspective inward as he shares at the most deep and personal level. It's a show you're not going to want to miss, so be sure to tune in. And before I forget, I'd like to give a big thumbs up for JourneysWithHeart.com. That's Journeys with an S, WithHeart.com, for their terrific trips that benefit BC charities. And if any of you are game to join me for the Active Discovery River Cruise, it's a whole new concept that's really exciting, from Frankfurt to Amsterdam this coming August, be sure to contact Jenny at JourneysWithHeart.com for more information. There's also some incredible really wonderful deals that Avalon Waterways is offering because it is for charity. So you want to check in about that. But switching gears, for today's guest, you are in for a heartwarming treat today. Joining us on the show is a husband and wife team that really, I guess the best way I can think about it is that they're really shaking up the world, shaking up, both in the corporate and personal worlds as they're redefining how we think about success, love, health, and courage. And I'm going to start with Dusty. And, he's done everything from engineering to social work to organizational effectiveness consulting. Dusty Staub, the core thread, as I see it, in there's so many things that he's done that it's hard to really pick one. But I'd say the core thread is his passion for attending to the needs of the heart, which culminated in his seminal book called The Seven Acts of Courage. And right by Dusty's side, literally right now, is his gifted wife and holistic mind-body-spirit family physician, Dr. Christine Staub. Christine also has an amazing story that has led her to become an advocate for community and healing for humans and for our natural world that we so rely on. As with all the guests on the show, you can learn more about Christine and Dusty on their profile page on the TeresaNicasio.com. So welcome both of you to today's show. It is so great to have you join us today.
Thank you. It's great to be part of it.
It's wonderful to be here today with you, Teresa.
Yeah, thank you so much. And as I mentioned to you before, and you've heard on previous shows, I always like to start with your why. And so I thought that, when we were talking about what you wanted today's show title to be, you called it, you put a lot of thought into it, and you decided to call it the heart or heart as compass. And I'd love to hear more about that, and because I know you did put a lot of thought into it. And I'm wondering if we could start by the two of you talking a little bit about how you think of the heart and also how it might be able to serve as a compass.
That's a great question. I think my why is to tied to a deep sense of purpose I discovered when I was 32, which was my purpose is to come from my deepest heart and invite everyone I meet to come from theirs so we can be our authentic best selves.
Okay.
And for me, the heart has been a compass for many, many years.
Dusty, I'm going to need you to raise your voice a little bit because I can barely hear you.
Well, I would say, you know, for me, it's easier for me to answer the why now in retrospect. When you're a young person, you just kind of do the things that you've been trained to do by your family. But now in retrospect, I recognize that each time that I have followed my heart as the compass, it has just opened my world up to more meaning and richer relationships that absolutely feed, you know, my life on a daily basis.
Nice. Now, I still want to hear what you have to say, Dusty, because you were saying something, but I just could barely hear it.
Yeah, so to repeat what I said, when I was 32, I really did a deep dive and figured out my life's purpose, which is to come from my deepest heart and invite everyone I meet to come from theirs, so together we can be our authentic best selves. And in fact, that was my first book, The Heart of Leadership, which really focuses on the important dimension of the heart as opposed to being trapped in our heads.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know, with the idea of the heart, I know there's a strong connection with courage. How is it you became so interested in courage and the heart? I don't know, maybe start with you, Dusty.
Yeah, well, I grew up as an Army brat, and I was... I was always an outsider. I was the damn Yank in England. I was the damn Army brat off base. I got beat up a lot. So I had a lot of fear. And I was frightened of my father also. I had to overcome a lot. And then as a young man, I was very touched by John Fitzgerald Kennedy's Profiles in Courage, where at a moment, one individual finding the courage was able to help shape more positively the history of the United States. And so courage became kind of a mantra for me, finding the courage to overcome and deal with all the fear that was in my life. I'll let Christine speak about her with regard to that.
Mm-hmm. Can you repeat your question for me one more time?
Yeah, I'm just curious about how you became so interested in courage and the heart.
Well... how I became so interested in courage, because I like if one doesn't live one's life with courage, the opposite of that is of course living one's life in fear, and quite honestly, Teresa, that doesn't feel very good.
Yeah.
And it's not the way that I want to move in life. And along the way, I've actually learned that. Well, fear is the bailiwick of our ego mind, and that's supposed to be in service to our heart. Fear is a natural emotion that is allowed to be present at certain junctures, you know, like when we need to be warned that there's danger, but it's not like we want to be having our entire life infected by fear. And unfortunately, the human ego mind, that's pretty much what it deals with concerns on a daily basis. So for me, quite frankly, my interest in courage is to lead a life that's more joyful and peaceful.
Yeah. And, you know, I've never heard it said that way. I love what you just said about fear being the bailiwick of our ego mind. Can you just talk a little bit more about that and you know, how you see, you know, what do you think of when you think of the ego mind?
Well, I guess what I'll talk to you about a little bit is my understanding about emotions comes from Chinese medicine, from my study of something called plant spirit medicine, by which I got introduced to Chinese medicine. And they talk about five major basic human emotions, two of which in our Western culture we like to think of as positive. And those are happiness and sympathy. And three of them we have a tendency to label as less desirable, and those are grief, anger, and fear. And yet, all five of these emotions, you've probably heard the term energy in motion, are actually the undercurrent of what life is made of. And they are meant to arise and fall away just naturally. That means that we're not supposed to hang on to any one of them at any given time. And yet, fear tends to color these emotions and makes us either suppress or try to amplify them. So as an example, happiness. You know that our culture says, be happy, be happy. You're only successful if you're happy all the time. So what does that mean? Let's plant a clown smiley face on our face and pretend to be happy, even if inside we're hurting, we're angry, we're in grief. Or on the other side, I'm feeling happy. Oh no, there are so many thousands of starving people in the world. It's not okay for me to feel happy. I can't show that I'm happy. I can't claim my happiness. And so you see, in both cases, the mind has infected what is a natural emotion that is meant to arise and fall away. So I don't know if that gives you a little bit more information.
Oh, I love that. And you know what it reminds me of, Christine, is there was a movie. It was a cartoon just a few years ago. I forget what it was
yes,
called.
Yes, Inside Out.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Inside Out. It totally reminds me of that. And,
yes.
And where they, you know, it, and it's beautiful because it's like a way of accessing not just the adults but also the children.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's really that same message because it's only when we are willing to honor all of who we are, the many nuances, that we can truly be in that place of joy. That and joy, I think of as much, much bigger than happiness.
Joy, yes, we think of in that context. You're quite right, Teresa. That joy could be right up there with peace and love. And I think of those as meta emotions, mm-hmm. and they are always present. So as an example, I'm a little bit more intellectually wired than Dusty is. He's more the emotionally wired one. It's easy for him to come to tears over something. Now, the fact is that when I have tears in my eyes, I celebrate the moment. Why? Because grief is the flip side of understanding that there's something that you have valued in life. So sometimes my tears come up not because there's a moment of loss, but because there's a moment of gratitude for something that I know it's in the moment, it won't be there forever, I could lose it at one point, but I want to really cherish it in this moment now.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear you with that. I do that a lot. A lot of times I'll be sitting with a client and I'm just so deeply moved by their humanity. And it's not necessarily something that is necessarily happy or sad, but there's a depth to it, and it just moves me to tears in that moment. The emotion moves through me, and it's those poignant moments that you know. They're, every moment is only once in a lifetime.
And they're the most honest moments, and I'm sure Dusty has something that he would love to add about how being authentic with our emotions and communicating those emotions, which people can't always read, really enlivens and enriches our life. So I'll let him speak to that.
Yeah, great.
One of the things I discovered, Teresa, when I was in private practice as a licensed marital and family therapist, was that many people are blocking their emotions. They don't want to feel certain things, and so they lock them down. And physiologically, when you lock down one emotion, you lock down your vitality, your life force. Just like in the movie, the Pixar movie, where with sadness that really opened up the grace to really be more fully alive, rather than trying to be stuck in joy or happiness. It's as a psychotherapist, as a consultant, as a coach, it's getting people to embrace the fullness of who they are. And that takes real courage for me, and the word courage itself comes from the French for heart. So for me, heart and courage are really developing that deeper sense of self and really celebrating the fullness of life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, I think that there's some really serious things going on our planet and with so much of this attempt to live this Disneyland mentality, this happy all the time. Or you think of Ronald McDonald, right, with a perpetual smile, a grin on the face, and what I've seen, and you know, you've both done work of the soul in many contexts, as therapists, as doctor, as consultant, with even with corporations and so forth, And what I've noticed is that because it's so much out there and in the media, even in the social media now, that everything's happy, 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 that when people are in the fullness or experiencing some of the other emotions, they feel quite alone. And not only that, but even worse is that it seems to bring up a lot of shame. Like, there must be something defective because I'm not feeling that way. I'm feeling this other way that's not quite as joyful. And I'm wondering if either of you or both of you would like to speak to that.
Yeah, so the question, as I understand it, is really, you know, what's going on in our society that people feel shamed when they don't always feel happy or positive or filled with grace. Mm-hmm. And I think part of the millions of people that suffer from anxiety and depression, at least here in North America, I think a big part of that is people have lost sight of the deeper purpose, the deeper meaning of life, which has it's like a roller coaster. You have all of these emotions that roll through you. And when we resist an emotion, we resist something, or we label it as bad, then when we are engaged in it, when we're feeling something quite natural, we can feel guilty. I love that Leonard Cohen song, The Sisters of Mercy. I think I know how you're hanging. I think I know how you're pinned. When you're not feeling holy, your loneliness says that you've sinned. He really captured that, you know, decades ago. I'll let Christine speak to that idea of guilt and shame about any kind of emotion.
Mm-hmm. Gosh, I don't know if I can do that on a prompt. Maybe, Teresa, you can give me another question to follow up.
Yeah, no, I think you really spoke to that beautifully, Dusty. And you know, I think that, you know, there's many levels, but ultimately, when we're talking about this idea of allowing ourselves to experience the fullness of the emotions. And one of the things that I know, you know, on your new website, theactsofcourage.com, and in your books, you speak a lot about the courage that it takes to actually live in the fullness of your being. And maybe, Christine, you want to start with talking a little bit about that?
Well, I think that the courage can... on our website, it continues the work of Dusty's that Dusty covered in his book, The Seven Acts of Courage, way back in 1999. And those seven acts of courage, as he put them forth, was he said, courage is not just one big bucket word. If we break it down into individual acts of courage, then it's a little bit more understandable. So first, the courage to dream and put forth your dream. You'd be surprised how many people, just by way of how they were raised, don't even believe that they deserve to dream, that they deserve to put something out there. Then it's the courage to see current reality, okay? In other words, if you want to get somewhere on your GPS system, you're going to have to put your current location in there, right? You got to be real about where you're starting from, even if that, you know, the journey might be a little arduous one. You got to know where you're starting from, see the current reality. Then there is the courage to confront and the courage to be confronted, third and fourth acts. That can be super tricky, as we're discovering just now, all of a sudden with the news media, that when one person has the courage to confront, it all of a sudden helps a whole bunch of other people to step forth and give their truth as well. So there's where the importance of community comes in. Like, if it's a cultural thing to be authentic and community supports that, we're great. Next, there's the courage to be vulnerable. In other words, to show your heart, to allow yourself to show your feelings. Then there's the courage to learn and grow. And then finally, the courage to act. And then ultimately, we added an eighth act. We were given that by a wise elder who said, you missed an act, and that's the courage to let go. The courage to let go of the way it's always been done, the courage to let go of judgments and beliefs. And so, yeah, so that's a little part of it, and I hope in our next segment that we'll be able to talk about how community plays a part in this.
Yeah, that would be wonderful. So as Christine, I think, was sensing, we are getting to the end of this first segment, and we need to take a short break, but we'll be having more with Dusty and Dr. Christine when we return, so be sure, don't go away, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to HealthyLife.net, the radio network that brings positive talk with positive change to make your world a little better.
Welcome back to the Dr. Teresa Nicasio Show. For those of you who are just joining us on today's show, we're talking with the president of Staub Leadership International, Dusty Staub, and holistic mind-body-spirit family physician, Dr. Christine Staub, about the heart as compass. And before we went to break, Christine, you mentioned that you want to talk a little bit about community and courage and living from the heart. And can you? Why don't we just start there?
Yeah, well, let's just talk about the fact that, unfortunately, today, what the media as a whole and society as a whole, the message that it's putting out there, right, as we already discussed, is basically saying, no worries, be happy and be happy all the time, and it's not nice to be angry, it's not ladylike to be angry, and it's not good for little boys to cry and certainly not for big men to cry, et cetera, et cetera. But imagine if you lived in a culture where emotions were honored for their primacy. So, for instance, the Huichol people, they call themselves the Wirarikas. They're from the Sierra Madres in central Mexico. And they were relatively untouched until perhaps the modern day by sort of outsiders. And when they have a conflict within their community, something that needs to be decided, everybody gets together, and sometimes people are talking over each other, and maybe someone's got their back turned and is just shouting something out, and other people are just, everybody's expressing their emotions. Like, a lot of stuff is moving and moving and moving, but they're doing it in a way where they're just being really authentic with what's arising. And then all of a sudden, somebody will say something, will propose something, and everybody recognizes that's it. That's the next step. And so there's this way that Dusty and I like to be guided. More and more we're learning, both of us fire keepers within the sacred fire community, we've gotten a lot of this training, is help people to get in touch with the emotions, their own emotions, what are the emotions underneath what the other person is saying, stay in touch with the emotions, move with the emotions. And then the thing that the mind is talking about, like the problem that the mind is pretending is the issue, it resolves itself. Often there's not anything else that needs to be fixed if we simply honor the emotions that are flowing.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, that really resonates. I just went a couple weeks ago to, I've been to a couple of her other trainings, so I went to a two-day training again with Dr. Sue Johnson. And she does what's called emotion focus therapy, and really, at that core level, that's really a lot of what she does. You know, going to that place of emotions while holding a place of compassion and honoring the challenges and the longings for attachment. So that's really beautiful. And Dusty, I'm wondering if you might be willing to speak, because here we are, we're, those of you listening, you may be gathering that we're looking at how Christine and Dusty are bridging the kind of the traditional ancient practices with the current healing practices. And Dusty, you guys have done some pretty incredible work, and I'd like to hear more about how you're applying this community concept that Christine was just describing to the corporate world.
Well, one of the ways in which I've applied it is I get senior executives out here to our 60-acre farm, and we have a big teaching yurt that we have everybody sit in a circle, and we also have a big community fire where in the evening we'll sit around the fire and people share stories, moments where they lacked courage, moments where they had courage, moments of transformation. And there's something about sitting around the fire with other executives where rank drops away and you become just another human being. Mm-hmm. Sitting around something that humans have sat around for hundreds of thousands of years. And in a way, it's built into our DNA. And this is where I think the heart as a compass helps us to navigate the spiritual terrain, the need we have for deeper meaning and more substance. And it allows people to step into the transformational, not only through community fires, but through almost council fires, where it's a gathering of people to just share and be human with each other, tied to these guidelines on courage and some actual skills on how to build the heart of leadership within an organization, within a team.
Mm-hmm. You know, and you've mentioned a couple times, Dusty, about meaning, and I know that Christine, you know, you have a really huge passionate part of your calling has to do with listening and attending to meaning. Can you talk a little bit more, Dusty, about what you mean by, you know, when we use the term deeper meaning, you know, what does that mean to you, and how do you see it connected with the heart?
How do I see it connected with the
yeah,
heart?
Yeah, this idea of meaning is, it can be interpreted, it's kind of like the word love, the word courage. It can have so many different meanings, and so, and we can apply it even if we want to just start with, even with regard to when you're working with a corporate folks, or you could talk about it in a relationship. Why is, what is the value of accessing that meaning, and how do people get to it?
Well, here's Brené Brown did a wonderful TED Talk on the power of vulnerability, something I've been talking about since 1999, and her talk has reached millions of people. And so CEOs have called her up asking her to come in and help them become more innovative and creative, only they say, only stay away from that vulnerability stuff. And I listened to her, and she said, listen, there is no way to liberate passion, no way to be more innovative if you don't learn how to be vulnerable. So for me, meaning is tied into this transformational realm. I look at the world as we step in two worlds. We live in the transactional world, the world of giving and getting, of contracts, of this and that, tit for tat. But we also stand in the world of transformation, which is the realm of spirit, of love, of deep meaning, of a sense of purpose in life. And we get trapped in the transactional, and we call that success. So status, rank, money. That can make you comfortable, but they won't make you happy. They won't satisfy you. They don't give you a deep sense of meaning. I work with people who make millions of dollars a year, and are not very happy. Because if you get trapped in the transactional, and you miss that transformational realm of purpose, then life ultimately seems empty. And if you want to liberate passion, and you want to liberate innovation in an organization, you've got to liberate the purpose. And you've got to really make room for people's passion, and you need to empower them to step forward. And this really takes courage, all eight acts of courage to make it happen.
Mm-hmm. And you're talking about how you use the fire as one of the ways to that transactional place, and I'm sure there's many others. Anyway, I think that maybe what we can do is we're going to go to another break, but I'd like to hear the both of you talking a little bit about relationships. And, you know, the two of you have a very special relationship yourselves, and so we can explore more about this heart as compass in, as it applies to relationships and maybe even parenting. So more with Dusty and Christine when we come back. Don't go away.
HealthyLife.net, the positive radio network.
Welcome back to the Dr. Teresa Nicasio Show. Today we're talking with a husband and wife dynamic duo who are redefining leadership and relationships from a heart-centered perspective. And we've been talking about courage and passion and meaning, and also the importance of listening to our hearts in this journey. And I know in my work as a therapist Dusty's been a therapist as well. He does a lot of corporate work and corporate consulting, which has a therapeutic element to it. And Dr. Christine, she's a physician. So we all are in that. But we also have our personal lives, and there's a lot of things that can sometimes make it challenging to be in relationship. And I'm wondering if the two of you, and either of you can start, would like to talk a little bit about the power of using the heart as compass in relationships, and you know, sometimes how we can get off track and lose our way.
That's a great question. The heart is compass. Well, when Christine and I first got together, as we were contemplating getting married, we sat down and did something very unusual that I've never seen a couple do before, but I felt it was very important. We sat down and we wrote a purpose statement for our relationship, how we were going to relate to each other, what my purpose was, what her purpose was, and what our purpose was in being together as a couple and what we wanted to accomplish. And we kept that on the piano for many years and would look at it. And when we had arguments or disagreements, we'd come back to it, because that central purpose, that deep sense of meaning, was something that gave us the reconnection to heart and was a compass for us how to steer our relationship.
Hmm. That's really, I've never heard of anybody doing that before. That was really brilliant. Yeah. Christine, did you have anything to add to that?
No, I think it was just that this image, part of the image that we had when we did that purpose statement was that, you know how sometimes they say the two shall be as one? Well, we didn't see ourselves as one. We saw ourselves in the same boat, right? And we were steering in a certain direction together, and we were helpmates for each other. And that meant that we understood that at one point, one person might be doing more of the rowing and another person, and the other partner might have to pull more, right? But what's been really cool is that as we have each sort of followed our own individual passions and heart, that we're now coming after 30 plus years together, we're coming to a place where these individual strands are really weaving themselves together, where we're involved with a lot more joint projects, the website that you mentioned, theastricourage.com being just one of them. And so that has been wonderful. And when Dusty does his programs with executives, he always begins with, okay, I need you to start off by being selfish, okay? And and by being selfish and by being clear about what your personal purpose in life is and staying focused on that, you will bring much richness to everything you do at work and at home and in the community. So it wasn't surprising that Dusty would come up with the idea for us to do this vision statement.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, and I think that there's real value in that. And you know, one of the things that's probably one of the most heart-wrenching challenges in relationships is when the visions don't seem to be going in the same direction. And I love that you use the boat analogy, and that you could think about it as, you know, on a road trip, and how much conflict can happen on a road trip when people think you're supposed to go this way and the other person thinks you're supposed to go that way. But you know, on that, when we have like big dreams that maybe diverge a bit, how do you suggest couples work through that? You mentioned about first being selfish about your unique, your
well,
individual.
Yes, but I think that one of the things, Teresa, is again something that I picked up early on. I actually married the teacher. You know, I took a leadership training class, and Dusty was the teacher.
Oh, that's so funny. That's great.
And one of the things that kind of the adage that they had at the beginning was, do you want to be right or do you want to be happy? Now, I prefer to say, do you want to be right or do you want to be at peace? So many of the things that we in life decide about, that this is the way that I want to do it, they're not really that important. And so, like my mother said, pick your battles. Like, there's certain things that that I am kind of picky about, and other things I go, okay, let's have it be Dusty's way. Early on, for instance, I know this is kind of a silly story, but we would go to the movies. We would be kind of late. The movie's about to start. I see a parking spot. I'm like, okay, let's pull right in the parking spot. But Dusty's not like that way. He wants to wander around the parking spot till he finds just the right spot, right? it's a funny story, but it sort of illuminates how we both work. And over the years, we've simply come to appreciate that each of us have gifts, and that at different times, those gifts will come to bear and be useful.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, that this notion about, I really want to spend some time with this, because I think this is an important message for all of you out there listening. I do a lot of couples therapy, and this one piece that Christine just sort of flew over in a way, but, you know, speaking to, I'd like to really rabbit ear it. So this idea of being right, you know, the question, you know, if you're ever in conflict, if you're, you know, is it more important to be right? Or as you're saying, happy or at peace? And Dr. Frank Lipman, I remember learning from him with regard to couples work, is it more important for you to be right or be in relationship? And so it shows that, you know, this idea of that literally the attachment is on the line. Or we can choose for it to be on the line, or choose for it not to be on the line. And I'm wondering if you guys can talk a little bit more about this, because it's powerful.
Yeah, it's very powerful. In fact, I want to go back to Christine's boat image. We have this craft of our marriage we've been in for over 30 years, and the challenge is you have two captains who actually have different ideas about how the ship should be maintained. And she's the oldest of three. I'm the oldest of six. She's a doctor. I was a marital family therapist and psychotherapist. We're both used to being right. We're both used to being in charge. And so some of our greatest passions have been moments of conflict where we've had to step back and one of us, I won't say who, has had to admit he was wrong and see a different way of navigating how we were going to get across. And I always remembered, do I want to be right here, or do I want to really work on loving this woman and connecting in this relationship? And when I'm smart, I pick connection. But I'm not always smart, Teresa, to be honest. I've always learned, because Christine is quick to help guide me back into the right channel.
Yeah, that's so perfect. And I know we need to go to break. I want to say something my husband had said before when we were trying to figure out about being together, and we were living on opposite ends of the planet, basically. And he was saying, well, you know what, in terms of where we live, we were trying to figure that out. It was a big issue. But he said, you know what, my home is wherever you are. And I think that captures it, in not just the actual home, but in life and so forth. Well, gosh, we got to go. But stick around. We'll be right back with more with Christine and Dusty.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Dr. Teresa DeCascio Show, where we celebrate life, love, and kindness while addressing the real challenges that are a natural part of living. And if you're just tuning in, we are here today talking with the wonderful Dusty and Dr. Christine Staub about courage and heart-centered living. And before the break, we were talking a little bit about courage and the heart and relationships. And there's Dusty has written a poem that he'd like to share. And I actually have heard this poem and was deeply moved. And it's one of the reasons why I invited the two of them to be on this show. Way back, I knew at that moment when I heard the poem, I'm like, they are meant to be on my show. So, Dusty, can we just start with you sharing this poem and maybe talking a little bit about what the context of the poem?
Yeah, a number of years ago, I keep a journal, and I had a dream in which Christine was very angry at me, and we were fighting. And suddenly the thought occurred to me, you've carved my name within your heart. And as soon as I had that thought, I spoke those words, and the scene was transformed into one of love. I woke up really joyful. And I forgot about it for years until I was flying down to Mexico to work with a client, and this poem just flowed out of me. It's called I Know Your Secret. It's dedicated to Christine Staub. I know your secret. You cannot hide it from me, for it shines in your eyes and flows through your words like water over rock, now roaring through my veins and drawing me forth from my pools of self-absorption. And, like water over stone, wearing a channel for my love to flow back to you. I know your secret. For even when you use harsh words, even when your angry gaze alone could incinerate me, I know that you have carved my name within your heart. And I know that you know that yours is carved into mine.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, did you have any thoughts you want to say about that, Christine? What was it like for you when Dusty shared that poem with you? Are you there? And we may have...
There we go. One of the best things that I told Dusty to share that poem because I love hearing it. I love hearing it over and over again. One of the best things that happened to us is that my grandfather underwrote our honeymoon, where we went to a place in Portugal where, quite frankly, the only people that could afford to be there were much older. In fact, they'd been married already 30, 40, 50 years, which was really grand. And we were on the dance floor, and there was this elderly gentleman with twinkling eyes, and he'd been married, I think, at least 50 years already. And we were the darlings of everybody in the hotel, right? Because here we were, this, quote, young couple, I at age 28 and Dusty at age 37. We were, quote, young. And he said, listen, there are going to be ups and downs. He said, but stay the course. It's really all worth it. And it makes me think about Harville Hendrick's work. I'm sure you're familiar with it. Mm-hmm. He wrote Getting the Love You Want, where he says that invariably we are attracted to people who have all the positive qualities of our parents or people who are primary caretakers. It's not until we really decide to set up relationships that we start discovering, oh, they might have some of the qualities that we have some issues with. And so mm-hmm. it's an opportunity to work with those. Mm-hmm. But the thing is if you don't stay the course, then you don't have the opportunity to use courage and emotional wisdom and heart-centered self-leadership towards moving past those. Because ultimately, as Dusty also says, we each need to take 100% responsibility for our life experience. We can never pin it on someone else.
Absolutely. And, you know, even just the idea of staying the course is one of the most courageous things that we can do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know? And the only other little small bits that I want to just throw in there that I just think are important messages to get across as we talk about heart as compass and how people can recognize heart as compass. First, in order to do it, again, a wise elder gave me this, slow everything down that you do by 25%. Just slow down. The other thing that we mentioned earlier is that there's this amazing thing that happens when you sit by fire. You know, whether it's a family campfire over the holidays or it's a community fire or it's just sitting with a candle. There's something special that happens there that, you know, goes beyond, let's say, what the transactional world would have to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not sure what it is, but I've been in many. I went through a program and that had one of the teachers, she's been trained in the shamanic traditions, and so for 3 years plus, it was amazing. And every time we would get together, which was, we'd get together at least 4 or 5 times a year, and we'd have at least 2 fire ceremonies with each in the beginning and the ending. And I found those to be extremely profound experiences and transformative, you know, as you talk about that word transformative and taking us out of that transactional way of being.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
And Teresa, there's a lot more information, articles, blogs, ideas, and guidelines on our website, theactsofcourage.com. Which can be very, very helpful to people. That's separate from the stopleadership.com website, which is for business to business. But the Acts of Courage is we really see it as a movement to help people in all walks of life, everybody, be able to step more into the heart, into transformation, and realize more of the fullness of life.
That's great. And so for those of you listening, it's the Acts of Courage. Again, when you go to the TeresaNicasio.com website, there's a direct link for it, but it's Acts with an S, so it's plural, TheActsOfCourage, so .com, just so you have that right. Gosh, you guys, this has been such a pleasure having you both on the show. I want to thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you. It's been a delight.
Yes, and thank all of you listeners today for tuning in. I hope you've enjoyed the show. I want to thank our sponsor, New Roots Herbal, for their generous support for making this show possible. Thank you. They're amazing. And if you don't know about New Roots Herbal, you know, check them out. They make clean products. Nothing is GMO. They are just all about integrity. So it's I really feel proud that they have proud and privileged that they have stepped up and are really helping you all receive these messages. So I want to also invite all of you to remind you to join us next week or next time when world-renowned psychiatrist and author Dr. Irvin Yalom is going to be joining us, and he's going to be talking about his life and his new memoir. And we're looking at a very, very special, very special show. And if you'd like to get more about the information about the show and to access the free wellness resources that are available at the Teresa's Wellness Hub, visit my website at TeresaNicasio.com. And at that website, you'll find every guest, every single show I create a web page for. And I'm creating this to be not only the guest being the a core part wellness resources, but also many other amazing, beautiful people who have gifts that can help you. I know that so many, you know, when situations come up, you know, it's a Dr. Google is oftentimes referred to, but it can be a bit random. And I wanted to create a real beautiful housing place for all of us, for everybody to be able to go to, where it's a one-stop shop to find, it's kind of the best of the wellness world. So I'm Teresa, and this has been the Dr. Teresa Nicasio Show. Until next time, have a great week.